Okay, good morning. I call this property tax division committee to order. We do have quorum. First on the agenda is the approval of February 14th, 2024 minutes. Chair Gomez.
I'd like to move approval of the minutes, Mr. Chair.
All right, we have a motion. All those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say nay. Motion carries. Well, we have a wonderful subject matter today, near and dear to all of our hearts, and that is a discussion about local government aid and county program aid that is essential to our partners across the state of Minnesota. And before we get to some of the testifiers and to learn about how the program and our investment has worked from individuals and county people from across the state, we have Jared Swanson with us to go over a summary. So I will turn it over to Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and members, Jared Swanson with House Research. I'm just going to give a brief summary of the LGA, CPA, and public safety provisions that were in the 2023 tax bill. Members should have a sort of a one-page, two-sided handout in their packets that has the same title that's on the title slide, and it has much of the same information that's on the slides, if they'd like to follow along. Before we get into the LGA changes that were in the 2023 tax bill, I just wanted to take two slides and refresh members' memories of how the LGA calculation works. So the local government aid calculation is determined based on each city's unmet need. And need within the formula varies by city size, and there are a number of factors that determine each city's need, and we'll talk about those in two slides here. But unmet need is equal to need minus the city's ability to pay. And ability to pay within the formula is each city's tax base multiplied by an average statewide city tax rate. If a city's unmet need in a given year is less than the aid that it received in the previous year, that city's formula aid under the program would just be equal to that unmet need amount. If the unmet need for a city increased, meaning it was greater than the amount of aid that it received in the previous year, it would receive that previous year's aid amount plus some portion of the difference between that aid amount and its current unmet need. Final aid amounts are subject to maximum decreases, so even if a city's unmet need goes below the aid it received in the previous year, there is a limit on how much aid it can lose from one year to the next, and that's the lesser of $10 per capita or 5% of the city's levy in the previous year. So the information that's on these two slides was how the aid program was administered before the 2023 tax bill changes, and those features of the LGA program are still in place. So the main change within the LGA program was around the factors that determine each city's need within the need calculation. And those are in the handout. The same table that's on slide four is also in the member handout. I'm not going to walk through each of these lines within the table individually, but you can see for each of the three city sizes, small, medium, and large cities, the formula need factors that were in place in the prior version of the LGA formula, and then the new need factors that were set in the 2023 tax bill. Before moving on from the LGA portion of the presentation, I just wanted to mention that there are runs that show the impacts of all of these changes in member packets as well. So the last change within LGA that I want to mention is that there was an increase in the appropriation of $80 million, and that brings the total annual appropriation for LGA to just over $644 million annually. Looking at the county program aid or CPA changes in the 2023 tax bill, there's fewer changes related to this program. The main one was the increase of $80 million in the appropriation. So that brings the new annual appropriation of county program aid to just under $345 million. There was one sort of technical change within the county program aid formula, and that has to do with the crimes data. So a portion of county program aid is determined by each county's share of Part 1 or serious crimes. The FBI and the BCA who collect the crimes data no longer classify crimes as Part 1 or Part 2 They now classify crimes as either Group A offenses or Group B offenses. So a corresponding change related to that change in reporting was made within the statutes for the county program made. Lastly, the public safety aid. So the 2023 tax bill contained a one-time distribution of $300 million to be paid in 2023 of public safety aid. Of this amount, 30% was distributed to counties and tribal governments, and 70% was distributed to cities and qualifying towns. And qualifying towns just means a town with a population of at least 10,000. Distributions to each of these recipients was based on population, and the requirement for spending was pretty broad. It just allowed these funds to be used for the provision of public safety. There were a couple of restrictions within the bill saying that units of government can't use the funds for things like armored cars, tear gas, or to pay settlements due to misconduct. But generally speaking, as long as the use was for the provision of public safety, counties, cities, towns, and tribal governments could use this aid for that purpose. Again, just like the LGA runs, there are also runs for the public safety aid and county program aid and member packets. So you can see how much aid each county, tribal government, city, and town received under this program as well. Mr. Chair, that concludes the overview of these three provisions that were in the 2023 tax bill.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Any member questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Swanson, one further clarification on that, the public safety aid. Could that money be used for ongoing wages and salaries for counties or cities?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I'd like to look at the language of the bill just to make sure I answer that correctly. I'm happy to follow up right after committee's over.
Representative Anderson. Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, sir, question for you, because this came up this summer during our task force meetings. The public safety aid, were there stipulations that they could not use it for EMS, or they could use it for EMS if it was part of their public safety within their city, not a private entity?
Mr. Swanson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hewitt, I believe the only restrictions were around some of the purchases and settlement issues that I described. Again, I'll double check the language, but I don't think there were restrictions that you're describing in the bill. But again, I'll follow up with you after committee on that too.
Representative Hewitt. Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you, Mr. Swanson. See, taxes can be kind of exciting. We talked about BCA, FBI, and armored cars. But next we have some presentations. Before Commissioner McDonald and Commissioner Harla come up, I just want to just share my appreciation to how we got here, and that is for the counties and the cities to come together and to present their need and the concerns, and because they are our partners. And as a state, we asked them to do a lot, but we were not providing them the resources they needed to fulfill what we've asked them to do. And so we're here today to hear from them, to see if what we provided them is meeting the needs. So please welcome Commissioner Harla and Commissioner McDonald. And Commissioner McDonald is my commissioner, so we'll let Commissioner Harla go first.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. My name is Commissioner Annie Harla. I represent St. Louis County. I'm elected by the center portion of Duluth, but of course serve Duluth alongside my colleague, Commissioner Paul McDonald. I want to start out by sharing my deep gratitude for this committee, supporting local government aid through cities and counties. I know this is a bipartisan interest because as local governments, and especially as counties, we're the arm of what you are passing every day. We are doing the work of following the rules that you set, and from that, we are able to have local government at a local level, which is exciting. I want to especially thank Chair Lislegaard, who worked tirelessly on this, as well as a number of other committee members that really championed this, and you were relentless in pushing forward on CPA and changes last year. When I go to AMC conferences or I talk to other commissioners across the state, this is something that unites all 87 counties. It's not often that we hear that a county in, you're going to hear from La Caparo County today in St. Louis County. We have many things that we agree on, but this is something that is a resounding agreement that we need this, and it is appreciated to carry out the work that we do on behalf of the state. Discussions about the unique, and when we look at St. Louis County, this we have about 4 million acres as a county. In fact, if you were to look at St. Louis County, we take up about the size of 16 metro counties. So if you're thinking about the drive that Paul has, that Commissioner McDonald has every day to come to meetings, it is something that is long and hard, and something that we have to look, we can utilize this money to be specific in each of our areas, whether it's the core part of Duluth or whether it's on our Canadian border. If we hadn't received this aid last year, this would have been an incredible amount of changes. In fact, our count, we would have looked at pulling from our roads and bridges budget, for example. And we have just as many road miles, or if not more, than MnDOT District 1. So to take a look at that, that's economic development in our county. That's ensuring people can come through. But it also could have affected our public health and human services response all across the state, all across our county. And just so you know, this actually was an investment in 3% of our levy, which was a needed break for our local constituents off of their taxes. We're hearing every day from constituents that they need that. So your support, passing that through to us, we can take that off of their local taxes. So because of your work, we are able to both invest in our communities and neighbors and provide tax relief at the same time. Again, thank you very much, and I appreciate all that you do to serve our state, and thank you on behalf of St. Louis County.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner McDonald.
Well, that's a tough act to follow. Mr. Chair, members, and referee Hewitt over here. I should have come in and said we both should have come in with a referee shirt on there. I've had some conversation with him on another issue with officials, but... Again, I really appreciate the opportunity to come in and meet with you today and talk to you about the significance of what was done last year. The fantastic work out of this committee, along with the entire tax committee. You know, we often talk, as Commissioner Harlow stated, about partnerships. Representative Lislegaard, Chair Lislegaard, said about the partnerships between the county and the state. And I think... You know, when we talk about partnerships and teamwork, being a former coach at the college level for 30 years, I think some of that meaning has been lost in the last few years, in our society. And I think if we all understand the importance of teamwork, it puts us in a position to be successful for all the citizens of Minnesota. And that's the goal when we get into these public arenas, to do the best we possibly can for everybody. You know, in the past, we've received little bumps here and there over time, and now with this historic bill passed last year, we are in a position now where we're able to be back where we were a couple decades ago. So it was very enlightening, as Commissioner Harla touched on, a very significant impact on our levy. And throughout the years, counties don't have access to a lot of other revenue streams, so we rely on property taxes. And the less of a burden we can have on our citizens of St. Louis County and all other 86 counties in the state of Minnesota, the better off each and every one of our citizens is going to be. When you look, you know, House research has shown that, you know, in the last 10 years, we've become more reliant on property taxes. And a trend I know, and I know you know, that we're not extremely happy with, but that's just the nature of the beast. So what Chair Lislegaard and others did last year has brought a smile to many, many citizens in St. Louis County. And I want to thank each and every one of you for that. And, you know, we can now, as a county board, work strategically rather than trying to be very creative and trying to plug holes and have to use budget reserves that aren't significant but put us in a position where, but this historic bill puts us in a spot where we don't have to do that. So appreciate the bill that was passed last year. And, we talked about teamwork, and I think this bill last year solidifies that we're a team. And moving forward, you know, like I said, as a coach, the game's on now. Here we go. It's up to you, up to us to fulfill our, the needs that you want us to do. And I look forward to staying strong and working together. But thank you for the time, and we're always here to help.
Thank you both so very much. We're going to hold questions for the members, so if you guys could stay around until the very end, that would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Terrell Clark, a commissioner from Stearns County. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Terrell Clark. I currently serve as the board chair of the County of Stearns. Good to see so many familiar faces like the two before me. I could probably almost say ditto. I want to thank all of you on behalf of our county and the other counties for what you did. A number of you have worked very long on this and getting to the point where there was parity with cities, especially given the array of services that we're required to provide, has been really important. Our county too has worked, we work very hard to keep our property taxes low, being cognizant of what the impacts are on our residents, on our ag producers, on our businesses. And this really made a huge difference. We were able last year, because of what you all did, to keep our levy down to a 2.71% increase. Without it, it would have been 6.2. Our budget is about $190 million, so it's made a huge difference. For those of you who might not know, Stearns County on the east side, where I happen to live, is part of a modestly to larger size metro area for a regional center for greater Minnesota, and we get very rural very fast. So kind of a microcosm of the state, and it's important that all of our communities are able to be strong, to have our region succeed. These funds really are making a huge difference, whether it's dealing with, we don't have as many miles of roads as St. Louis, but we have a lot of miles of rural roads, whether it's dealing with the higher costs of that infrastructure or for our law enforcement, whether it's trying to be more on the preventive side with some of the work that we're doing with law enforcement, our hospital, our mental health center, on our community action teams, or whether it's starting for the first time ever a housing trust fund so that we can really try to move further upstream. These funds make a big difference. I would be remiss if I didn't actually also say some of our biggest cost drivers, which include out-of-home placements, some of our most vulnerable adults, those who need to be committed. Those are costs together that are just really hard to figure out, and our working together, our partnering really is key. So I would like to go ahead, because they represent parts of our area, Representatives O'Driscoll and Anderson, for the work that you've done long term on this. This really is a bipartisan effort. Lastly, Mr. Chair, if I might, because the public safety aid was brought up, this too is key for our region. And my little district, it's a pretty dense district, has our hospital, it has the VA Medical Center, it has St. Cloud State, has a number of businesses, and as part of a three-county community, which is a little unusual, the public safety pieces, whether it's in that more dense area or the more rural areas, is meaning that we're able to purchase more vehicles that our sheriff's department's needing. It is helping us work towards what we're needing to do on dispatch. We're going to need to expand, hopefully relieve some of the property tax concerns with that, offering mental health check-ins for our law enforcement, among others. So, you know, trying to figure out these array of tools that we could do and figure out how to make it sustainable is pretty key. So with that, again, I want to thank you and look forward to continuing to work together this session and moving forward.
thank you for everything you do.
Thanks.
Next up, we have County Commissioner Todd Patzer. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Todd Patzer, a Black Pearl County Commissioner. Thank you for the opportunity to visit with you today. I'm from the smallest of the counties you're hearing from today. Lac Qui County is about 7,000 people in southwest Minnesota, right along the South Dakota border. And we are an agricultural community, and most of our tax base is driven by ag. And CPA, I will tell you, is one of the most important things, the most important factors in our levying and budgeting process. I want you to know that county program aid is dollar for dollar property tax relief in Lac Qui County. We set our budget for levy, our budget for services, and we subtract the county program aid, every bit of it, right off the top, and that's our levy. In Lac Qui County, our story is a little bit unique. We've had a bit of a hectic roller coaster. In 2005, our county was getting nearly $1 million in county program aid. Just 7 years later, and that made up about 30% of our levy. And just 7 years later, it was down to around $100,000, which amounted to nearly just about 3% of our levy. So it was a very big change. In 7 years, it had dropped 80%. This year, thanks to you all and your work, county program aid offset our levy by 10%. That's no joke. That's real property tax relief for Minnesotans. In the last several sessions, the legislature has tried to act to help right this wrong. Quite often, it was marginal improvements, but last year was different. The work you all did last year was a historic bump, and it still isn't where we were as far as percentage from our best CPA years, but you made a very big difference, and our levies are much lower because of it. And I guess lastly, I would close as a former AMC president. County program aid is one of the only issues that will unite all 87 counties across Minnesota, large, small, metro, rural, in lockstep. I don't think county program aid is a term that gets used around dinner tables in Minnesota very often, but to county commissioners, it's a big deal, and it's a very important piece to help us offset state mandates, serve our residents, and reduce property taxes. So thank you very much for your work, and I would answer any questions if you had any.
Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have John McCarthy, City of St. Paul.
Good morning.
Your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. John McCarthy, I'm the finance director for the City of St. Paul. And, of course, as the finance guy, I have to have slides with some numbers on them. So I'm going to try to see what I can do here. May have some help here. Folks, see those slides? Yes, no. There we go. Great. So again, I'm John McCarthy, Finance Director for the City of St. Paul. Here this morning to share a little bit about St. Paul's history with local government aid. St. Paul is the capital city, second largest city in the state, but and the data that I'm going to share today is specific to St. Paul, but I think really relevant to all the other cities in the state, and a similar LGA story for lots of cities over these last several years. I'm going to start with, I think, the way all LGA histories tend to, which is going all the way back to 2002. Of course, 2002 is the starting point for a lot of these analyses because it was the beginning of a rocky period for cities. We saw some pretty significant reductions in our annual LGA appropriations year after year, and also that was the beginning of the period in which LGA was no longer pegged to inflation, so cities no longer saw that kind of annual incremental increase. The blue line here represents what St. Paul has received in local government aid going back to 2002, and the red line represents what it would look like had LGA continued to be indexed to inflation since 2002. You can see I started my career with the City of St. Paul in 2006, so kind of had my formative years right in the heart of all of these big reductions. Was really appreciative in 2013 when the legislature took action to update the formula and increase the total appropriation. You can see that bump for St. Paul there in 2014. And again, echoing the remarks from the commissioners, the work that this committee did last year to bump up the allocation again and to again revise the formula made a huge difference to St. Paul. I'll talk about that a little bit more on a future slide. But you can see that bump in 2024 where St. Paul went up to about $81 million in local government aid starting in 24. This slide really highlights the interconnectedness between property taxes and local government aid that all the commissioners have referenced. To echo what they've said, local government aid is property tax relief. This slide represents the share of revenues, total revenues in St. Paul that were made up of property taxes versus local government aid. You can see back in 2002, LGA represented over 40% of our annual revenue, and property taxes were just about 25%. Since those LGA cuts in the early 2000s, those percentages have completely flipped, and now property taxes make up about 45% of our revenue, and LGA is somewhere around 20%. Again, you can see those bumps that we got both in 2014 and again in 2024, and you can see in the data that those lines kind of bend towards each other when we get those bumps. And I've seen statewide data, and you can see those same trends that when cities get increases in LGA, it means direct property tax relief to their residents. I know, again, that we go back in time to 2002, and we've heard criticisms of that's kind of ancient history. And so in St. Paul, we've tried to really focus on the current formula. Mr. Swanson did a great job of explaining that. I won't go into a ton of detail here, but I do want to talk about what St. Paul's unmet need looks like. So, again, based on the Department of Revenue formula that calculates every city's need and then what every city can generate on their own, the difference between those two is the city's unmet need. St. Paul, at $143 million, has the largest unmet need in the state. And the gap between what we get in LGA and what our unmet need is also the largest in the state at $62 million. Looking here at this slide, this reflects the five cities with the highest unmet need across the state and what their gap is between what they get in LGA and what their unmet need is calculated by the Department of Revenue. So again, highlighting that this is really a statewide issue. These cities are located all across the city and continue to have needs that LGA is able to chip away at, but still significant gaps. And I want to close by, again, recognizing the work that this committee did last year and what it meant for St. Paul. In St. Paul, it was a really transformative increase. We had an $8.8 million increase in local government aid to St. Paul that got us up to back for the first time above what we had in 2002. So this is the highest level since 2002 for St. Paul. That, again, we just like counties, set our levies the same way. We back out what we're getting in LGA and then go after the levy. And this was the equivalent of a 4.5% increase on the St. Paul tax levy that we were able to forego because of this LGA increase. It meant that the owner of a median value home in St. Paul saved $86 last year on their tax bill. That meant that they actually saw a median value homeowner in St. Paul saw a reduction in their local taxes last year because of this increase in local government aid. And the last thing I'll say here is that I recognize $81 million is a big number for one city and that you all are balancing the needs of the entire state. And as the county commissioners have all referenced, this is an important partnership. And so to put that in context as kind of the return on investment, in 2023, purchases that were made within the city of St. Paul contributed over $330 million in state sales tax. And so to be able to continue that partnership, for us to be able to continue to be one of the economic engines of the state, that partnership is crucial and vital. And so I thank you again for the work that this committee did last year to, again, update the formula and increase the allocation for cities.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate it. Next up, we have the city administrator from Goodyear, Dan. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dan Mateka. I'm the city administrator for the city of Goodyear, Minnesota, down in the southeast corner right next door to Winona. So that gives you a perspective of where, what part of the state I'm from. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify in front of you today. I've been with the city of Goodyear for 17 and a half years. We're a community of about 4,200 people. Our 2024 general fund operating budget was about $2.5 million, which includes everything from salaries and fringes to supplies to roads and maintenance to capital equipment. As you know, the reason we're here today is to talk about what this group and the legislature did in 2023 with the increase in LGA. For Goodview, that meant an increase of about $149,000 or a 34% increase. So when we received that figure, we ventured into our budget process, and we, with a total goal of keeping the taxes relatively low, if not minimal decrease, and I think we did our best at doing exactly that. Our budget process is different than any other city, probably. We set our preliminary levy high in September, and then we, with the full intention of reducing it come December. And that's exactly what we did. In September, we set a preliminary levy of 9.4%, and then we decreased that down to 5% come December. Excuse me. What's that mean in terms of dollars? Our levy increased $83,500. This increase was due to many things, which everyone in this room has heard. The cost of everything is going up, from supplies to utilities to equipment, everything. But what did the new LGA dollars do for us? It gave us the opportunity to make some capital purchases that we had been basically deferring, replacing two 2009 pickup trucks in our street department, a 2014 squad for our police department. So those, the LGA gave us those opportunities. There is another part that brought our levy down too, and that's the other part of this group, and that's the public service safety aid. For Goodview, that was about $180,000. It came in to help our police, fire, first responders with their respective departments. What did we do with it? In 2024, we budgeted about half of that. How did we spend it? We are planning to spend $17,000 on replacing only five sets of new turnout gear for our fire department. Each one is $3,400, so $17,000 for that, along with $8,000 to replace 30 new helmets for our fire department. We also used $8,300 to purchase a couple new radios. All 30 of our radios needed replacing. $8,300 doesn't go far, but we got a lot of help when we received a $92,000 donation from our local activity group specific to replacement of those radios. So now we have replaced all 30 radios with their help. We are also planning to spend $35,000 to equip the squad car that I referenced earlier that the levy was used to purchase. So we purchased the squad out of the levy, the equipment out of the PSA funds. We finally budgeted $21,000 for our first year cost share of a new records management system software. That's a mouthful, I'm sorry. Program that the Winona County Sheriff's Office purchased that we are required to use. This is an ongoing expenditure, so I'm sure we will use future dollars of the PSA to pay for that. So where would our levy have been without any of this extra LGA or PSA funds? With the budget that we eventually passed, it would have been 19.5%, and we came in at 5. So what you did, what this group did, had tremendous effect on the city of Goodview, a community of 4,200. And on behalf of those 4,200 residents of the city and its city council, I want to thank you and your colleagues, this group, for these two new funding sources that help keep property taxes down while still allowing the city the opportunity to continue to give the service our property owners deserve and have come to expect from our great city. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have the city manager from Brooklyn Park. Jay? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Uh, Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jay Strobel. I'm the city manager for the city of Brooklyn Park. I'm here to share a few comments with regard to changes in local government aid and also the public safety aid dollars. I'll first start out with the local government aid. I would describe Brooklyn Park as a high need community with a very modest tax base. We're a community of about 87,000, fourth largest in the Twin Cities area, sixth or fifth largest in the state. A little bit of history in terms of LGA for Brooklyn Park. Between 2019 and 2022, we received just around $1.38 million and then up to about $1.47 million. In 2023, that formula put us down to zero for the local government aid. We appreciate coming back onto the formula. In 2024, the aid that we're receiving will be just over $900,000. And then the formula we're slated to drop back again to around $700,000 in 2025. One of the things I did want to note in terms of the local government aid, when you compare Brooklyn Park to other cities across the state, especially those of similar size that have similar taxable net tax capacity per capita, again, as I mentioned, we have a very modest tax base, but we don't fare as well on the current formula compared to other cities across the state. So I would just request at some point down the in the future, as you all review LGA, I think that there should be some additional factors taken into consideration in terms of identifying unmet need. With regard to the public safety aid dollars, this was distributed based on the population of the cities. And Brooklyn Park received $3.7 million as part of that aid. Our intention is to spread those $3.7 million over 3 years. Some of the investments that we're looking to make around expanding our police cadet program, adding a juvenile detective, provide officer sign-on bonuses, and then also the creation of a community crime intervention and prevention team. We had originally actually made a pitch for those competitive Department of Public Safety dollars and with a request of around $2.8 million to establish that team, and unfortunately only were allocated $350,000 towards that effort. So we had to shift some of our public safety aid dollars towards the formation of this team, which is focused on intervention and outreach to our most at-risk youth and young adults, really trying to focus on reducing violent crime in the city of Brooklyn Park. So with that, again, thank you for the additional resources around public safety aid especially, and getting us back on the formula for LGA. My only request is that a community like Brooklyn Park that has high needs and a very modest tax base, I think in the future, additional formula consideration should be made for that unmet need. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Before we go to member questions or open up to the public, I would like Representative Norris actually to go up. He carried the public safety portion of the bill. And I'd like him to walk through the whole bill. Just kidding.
In detail, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name, obviously, and then proceed.
Chair Lissagard, members, I'm Representative Matt Norris. I represent the Blaine and Lexington area. I serve as the vice chair of the tax committee, and it's an honor and a privilege to join the tax team here in the property tax division today. I want to talk a little bit about the public safety aid that I authored last year. Coming into the 2023 legislative session, I heard two primary concerns from the residents in my district. One, they were concerned about the spike in crime that we had seen coming out of the pandemic. And two, they were concerned about the rapidly rising property taxes and the pinch that that was putting on their budgets on top of inflation and all the other challenges that we were facing economically. And so, you know, we looked at one of the challenges with public safety is that it's primarily funded and operated at the local level, which means that the cost of providing those public safety services often comes through the property tax levy. So Senator Gustafson and I teamed up to figure out what could we do at the state level to provide some relief and also help enhance public safety around the state. And we knew that public safety needs differ. What's needed up on the Iron Range is different than what's needed in Blaine and what's different than what's needed in Minneapolis or St. Paul. And so we looked at LGA and CPA as a model for how we could get some resources to our local government partners to reduce reduce the burden on property taxes, but give them the flexibility. And, you know, it's wonderful today to have heard all the different uses that cities and counties are utilizing this public safety aid for, whether it's police, whether it's fire, whether it's EMS. They weren't able to be here today because of a scheduling conflict, but in my district, I have Lexington. It's a small little town of 2,000 people, so not a big property tax base. They team up with a couple of other small cities in the area on a joint police department, the Centennial Lakes Police Department. And they were able to, for the first time with this public safety aid in 20 years, add an officer to their police force. Without this public safety aid, that would have had to be covered entirely through the property tax levy. And in a small little town like that, you know, the salary and the equipment for just one officer can be pretty hefty. So I'm pleased with how we've seen this play out throughout the whole state. Want to thank you, Chair Lislegard, for your leadership in helping Senator Gustafson and I shepherd this through last year. And I think it's really working well for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Anyone else in the public would like to testify and say how great we are? All right. Seeing none, we'll open it up for member questions. Representative Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the slide by St. Paul in regards to LGA gap remaining in cities with highest unmet need, I noticed the first three are cities of the first class. The only city of the first class that isn't listed here is Rochester, and it'd be nice to understand the per capita unmet need across the cities, because that way we can understand the blips of where there are some moderate sized cities that have, you know, greater unmet need. But I would hope that the other cities of first class would try to understand how Rochester has a lower one. Maybe, you know, there's some effective techniques that they could use, because Rochester and their homes of the school district, there are about 100 different languages spoken. Yes, it's an extremely diverse community with a number of different countries that people have come here from. So that we actually, it'd be nice if we helped cross-pollinate successful ideas and techniques so we can improve the cities. The, in a lot of the different lists and runs, I think it would be enlightening to see the per capita, because then we can look at the top 10 or 20 per capita for unmet needs plus that are receiving LGA, so we can analyze if there's some special programs that could be addressing and fixing those needs so that in 5 years they disappear because they're solved. Mm-hmm. Solutions are better than, you know, just here's a check. And I think we need to take the state's critical mass and leverage that to help get solutions and options that help the different communities. I noticed in the materials that were distributed that there is a, what, $45 million new for housing. I gave the chair and some members a list of the effect of the pre-1940, you know, addition, and that's about $40 million. So the same magnitude. So if we're adding more for housing, let us look at how we can help fix some of the issues, like addressing old sewer and water lines, because I think that's a better tell than the housing, because cities that reach an issue are because of old infrastructure. And then we can look at, you know, different renovation programs and help and assist the cities to, you know, do better. Because, you know, frankly, especially the small cities, they don't have the staff to understand what could we do better. Mm-hmm. And so when we give the aid, we should also be assisting in the options that 5 years down the line, they won't have these issues. And solutions should be part of our package and our bills along with the aid. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next, we have Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I want to thank Representative Norris for stepping up and testifying, but I did have a question for him, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman. And
that's perfectly fine.
Thank you.
Representative Norris, would you please go up to the...
Mr. Chairman, and you can't let your first-term lawmaker testify and not be held accountable. Come on. Mr. Chairman, so Representative Norris, you spoke eloquently about the public safety aid and why it was so important. My first question is, then, why did you structure it so now that it all expires on June 30th and they get nothing next year?
Representative Norris.
Chair Lissagard, Representative Garofalo, I would have loved to have had it continue. One of the realities of the budget situation last year was that a large proportion of the budget surplus that we had was one-time funding. We had a much more limited amount of ongoing funding. So, you know, I worked hard. We negotiated in good faith, and we were able to get a very large amount, $300 million. I mean, this had never been done before. We got $300 million done in one-time funding, Senator Gustafson and I are in conversations about, you know, how might we be able to continue that in the future and make this look perhaps more like an ongoing source of funding, like local government aid and county program aid.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo, that was a good answer. I mean,
Mr. Chairman, what I heard Representative Norris say is that they had enough money to make the tax increases permanent, had enough money to make the permanent agency increases and the huge pay raises the commissioners are getting. We had enough money to do that. We had plenty of money for whatever the law enforcement costs are going to be for releasing prisoners from prison early. We got plenty of money for that. But we didn't have enough money to make the funding for public safety permanent. That's what I heard. Now, I think public safety is our number one priority here at the legislature. Yeah. I don't understand why that wouldn't be the first dollars out. Also, Representative Norris referenced local government aid. Well, if we look in the tails of this bill, local government aid actually goes down. There's nothing permanent about the LGA changes. Now, the CPA changes, those go up by 12%, even though revenues to the state are only going up by 7%. But I guess that'll be a post-election issue to figure that out. But what we're seeing here is we're seeing a budget that's being set up for failure. We're seeing a budget that's being set up with unsustainable spending and revenues that aren't able to account for it. And it's disappointing that we're being told that there wasn't enough money to properly fund public safety aid, but we've got a whole host of goodies and candies that went out, and there's an exhaustive list of that, whether it's the free health care we're giving to people who are in our country illegally, and other items. I just think it's disappointing. I think we could have done a better job taking care of public safety aid and making that permanent, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that. Thank you for going to the testifying table. And all right, next, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the discussion. As you're a part of this task force that we formed, we have a bigger concern, and I'm glad we have a mix of people in the room, and Representative Garofalo is right. We have to look for permanent funding in the public safety realm. One of the things the state has failed to do and we have failed to do is recognize EMS as that entity. We now have a problem, and all of us in this room know it. We don't like to talk about it, but our aging population right now, when we transport patients by ambulance, 80% of them are over the age of 65, and they are government payers, which means you collect about 40 cents on the dollar at best for those payers, which is putting the burden back on the services. Many of them are in this room because they own the cities and counties own their own service. What are we looking at for that? Because, yes, I believe this is a number that we need to look at the $300 million part. But we have bills circulating in the House and in the Senate right now to add another $125 million a year to fund these ambulance services. And this is partially our fault because we have not been keeping our finger on the pulse, per a better say. But I think that we need to start looking at what sources can we do this with. I mean, could it be a tax on Teslas? I don't know. But but I'm looking, I'm searching, and I hope Representative Garofalo can help me with this, but I had to do it, sorry. But anyways, no, this is a problem that we're going to have, and we as Minnesotans, now maybe like public safety is in our Constitution, so is education, but we have to look at this because it's part of our value. Our part of our value is not to let our people, when they call for help, lay there. And this is really important, and I hope all of you, and I'm not looking for answers today, but I'm looking for, you know, where can we find this revenue that is muchly needed for our public safety entities, our fire departments, and our EMS. These are all important to us, and we all want to make sure we take care of them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Chair Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm so glad that Representative Garofalo has developed some compassion for our local government partners in the year 2024 about the expenses that they're having to assume. He wasn't actually he's been in office a long time, but he wasn't here in 2022 when his party made the decision to remove the IPD inflator from our LGA and CPA allocations. Now, if those had stayed on in 2024, we wouldn't just be getting back to our 2022 levels of LGA and CPA. In county program aid, 2002. We wouldn't just be getting back to those levels after 20 years. Instead, they'd be almost twice what they were now in CPA. Like, we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that we would have gone to our local partners over the last two decades if we hadn't made the decision to take the inflator off. What we know is that these like no tax vows are totally disingenuous, because we saw what happens. What happens when we don't help our local partners meet the needs of our citizens is that they go to their tax base. They go to their property tax base because that's what the only tool that they basically have at their disposal. And so, you know, in my city, which it's maybe not typical of everything, but like, we spend the most money on public works, and then not far behind it is law enforcement. And so if I ask my city, what do you spend your overall allocation of LGA on, it sort of flows in that way. Mostly it's on public works. Second, it's on law enforcement. And so, yes, there's some concern about, oh, this public safety aid that we were able to add last year. But the truth is that if we just had been doing our job, if we hadn't passed our job off to our local partners over the last two decades, that we would have been able to help them keep up with the cost of providing public services to our residents during that time. Instead, I mean, you heard basically every testifier talk about this. We are just getting back to the level of aid for counties and cities that we had 20 years ago. What's happened to the cost of literally everything? The cost of labor, the cost of materials to build those roads and bridges, the cost of a police car since 2002. So I wanted to say this before Representative Garofalo talked, but it kind of dovetails nicely with his comments. Because if we actually care about public safety, the people who are delivering public safety in our communities are our cities and our counties and our townships sometimes. And so when we don't keep up with our part of the bargain, with funding those basic city services, we're not funding law enforcement. Like, you can't say that you want to fund law enforcement and then support keeping LGA and CPA at pre-2002 levels for 20 years. And so I just really want to thank Representative Lislegard, Chair Lislegard, because originally I will just say that the House position on LGA and CPA not only provided the bump that we were able to get done up back to those plenty era 2002 levels, but his proposal and the House position that we took into conference re-added that inflator back on, which is the right thing to do because it acknowledges reality. Like, we can put our hands over our eyes and say, oh, no new taxes. We're over here. We're at the state. We're purists on taxes. Well, guess what? Our local governments, they don't get to be purists on no new taxes because they actually have to keep the doors open. They have to make sure that when somebody calls 911, there's someone there to respond. They have to make sure that our schools have the teachers and the ESPs and the counselors that are required to keep the basics of our society going. And so, you know, I want to thank Chair Liz Lagarde again. And I want to say that the House DFL is going to continue to fight to re-add the inflator onto LGA and CPA because it just makes sense. And if you care about adequately funding local law enforcement, then I hope that you will join us in acknowledging the reality of what it costs to run a city, to respond to a 911 call, to keep a street paved. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Representative Coulter.
I was afraid of that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's always a little challenging, yeah, following someone who's as effective a communicator as Chair Gomez is.
Well, I hope it works out for you.
Me too. I think Chair Gomez stole a lot of my thunder in what I had to say. And I think what we have seen and heard time and time again in this committee and time and time again today is that when we fund local government aid, county program aid, that is a good investment. That is direct support to, and I'm glad that a number of folks use this term, to our local partners, because they are our partners in governing. And I know many of us come from the world of local government. I was on my city council for 5 years. And I think what we see is that, by and large, local governments are responsible budgeters. We heard that from counties and cities large and small, that through their budgeting process, through the investments that they made, even in including this, the public safety aid that Representative Norris championed, you know, these are responsible, needed things that our communities just need. And I think that comes from the fact that you kind of have to be when you're at the local level. When folks recognize you in the grocery store or, you know, at the local park, you can't escape accountability that way. And I think what we also saw today, and this is, you know, that chart from the presentation from St. Paul, I swear to God, I've seen that chart in probably five or six other different committees with different axes. State investment goes down and some other negative externality, for lack of a better term, goes up, whether it's property taxes or tuition or, you know, take your pick. And what we learn is that it's pay me now or pay me later. And pay me later is always more expensive. It's always tougher, and it always means more challenges for our communities. And so, you know, I am really grateful for the investment that we made in local government aid. But I do think we need to continue this conversation about unmet need. You know, my community is a traditionally property tax wealthy community. I have literally the largest individual property taxpayer in the state, in my district. And we got our LGA went up to $56,616, which is $56,616 more than we've gotten in decades. So I am grateful for that. I really am. That is less than 1% of our levy increase from last year within the city of Bloomington. And we have our own unmet needs. We have to buy fire trucks. We have to remodel our fire stations because they were all built 50, 60 years ago. And it turns out putting out fires looks a little bit different than it used to. So I think that is a conversation I am very dedicated to continuing, and I know others are as well. Because I think we do recognize that our local partners are responsible spenders, and they're spending them on things that folks need. You know, within the city of Bloomington, 60%, 70% of our budget goes to police, fire, public works. The folks who keep us safe and plow the roads and make sure we have our award-winning water in the city of Bloomington. And that has to come from somewhere. And so I am encouraged that there is an energy to continue this conversation. And I'm excited to do just that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Nice job, by the way. Next, we have Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, where do I start? You know, this is kind of a wide-ranging discussion here. I don't think that we want to get into a topic on who favors public safety. I think we all do. Public safety is important to all of us, and we all have to agree on that. And, you know, the one thing I've heard, and I've been around here a while, that 2002, it's like the state held up the counties and cities and took away half their LGA. It's because we are in deficit. I mean, there's not an unlimited amount of money here at the state just because, you know, we're the state. You know, there are realities in financing we have to accept and do with what we can, what we can do. And difficult choices were made. And I was a commissioner through some of those years. And you got to tighten your belt. And again, we don't have this unlimited mountain of money here that we can dish out. We'd like to do it more, but you know, we have to face reality. And just on the inflation factor, you know, it would be nice if we had the inflation factor on some of these things. It would be easier. To me, it kind of takes away our jobs here. We have the gas tax on inflation now, a lot of other things on the inflation factor. And I think it isn't wrong that we get together on an annual basis and look at some of these programs. That's a lot of money, $650 million for LGA and about half that for county program aid. To me, it's worthy that we look at these things and add additional funding if we're able to. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there are restrictions, things happen, and our taxpayers are not unlimited in what they can give to their city, county, township, or state. And I think we all do the best jobs that we can. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well said. Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I had two things, but I really appreciate Rep. Anderson's comments. So I'm going to start with that and save my save my thanks for the St. Paul folks for presenting at the end. I was actually just going to say, you know, for us, I really appreciated Chair Gomez's comments. I think the key takeaway from that is that, you know, we have to pay for the things that we care about, and I think it's right. All of us as elected officials, hopefully educated too, you know, really do value what public servants and our public safety folks contribute to the community. And that is precisely why, you know, we need to make sure that we fund that. I know a lot has been said already, but I also want to share in other states that, you know, have not prioritized funding of, you know, public safety. You know, private equity firms have purchased EMS services, and that is not where we want to go, because when things get privatized, that means, you know, these people are trying to make a business out of driving people in subpar ambulances, and that is not good for patients, that is not good for citizens. And so I just want to close the discussion by saying, you know, we can talk about where we spend money and you know, perhaps that's not you know, sales tax exemptions and stuff, right? It's making sure we pay for the things that we care about. Also, thank you to St. Paul folks for presenting. I appreciate that we've updated the LGA formula, and sometimes I think for folks in St. Paul, we feel like that does not accurately reflect our need as a capital city where a lot of folks come and you know, we welcome folks. We want you to come visit us and use our resources, but that also means that we are hosts that sometimes are not properly compensated, right? And so the city had to come to us and ask for a sales tax increase so we could repair a lot of the roads that have been repaired for a really long time. So thank you for that, and thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any other member?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify that when Mail took over the ambulance service down there, that they have added additional helicopters, new and better equipment and ambulances, and I just didn't want people thinking that if it shifted to an outside of a government entity that sub-quality services were put forth. I've seen the opposite in my area.
Okay, well, just to kind of wrap this up towards the end, I want to thank everyone who came and testified. I think that we heard that what the investment that the state of Minnesota did with our partners did make a huge difference, and that's why we're here. And not every community has the same ability And I'll just say that the League of Minnesota Cities in the top five cities that have unmet needs is Virginia, Eveleth, Ely, International Falls, and Blue Earth. And that's greater Minnesota, and that's what I represent. And the less you have, the more it means to you, but you actually do need help. And we have communities in this state that they don't get anything. You heard Representative Coulter, you know, where they get 50-some thousand dollars. I got the city of Virginia, they get $7 million. And, you know, and they need it. And we have other communities that are contributing. And we all, as Commissioner McDonald says, we are a team. And we do need to work together collectively in this state of Minnesota and help people, because it doesn't matter where you live, doesn't matter, but we all should have that right to have those quality services. So I want to thank each and every one of you guys for coming. I want to thank all the different coalitions. How this happened, there was all this money, and typically in when you have that kind of money, you have people all pulling and fighting amongst themselves to scrape and claw and get what they can. And what we saw last year is we saw the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and we saw the counties. They came together. They came united, right? Just like Commissioner McDonald said, they came as a team, and they educated and they advocated in both bodies and with the governor. And that is how we were able to do what we did, is by that teamwork and the people around this table. And so I want to thank each and every one of you. This is extremely important, and we need to continue. Gomez, as always, your words of elegant and passion that come from your heart was timely. And so looking forward, I will tell you that we're not going to be there's caucuses apparently next week. So we won't be meeting next Wednesday, but we will the following Wednesday. And we will start to be hearing bills. So I just want you guys to know, if you're going to have a bill, you'll be contacted through Patrick, the guy who does everything. And then we're going to start rolling. So thanks again for everybody that came. And God bless. We're adjourned.